This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. This year marks the 50th anniversary of Folkways Records. Folkways produced records that changed America's musical life. Many musicians and listeners discovered folk, blues, and world music through Folkways albums. And the label changed the lives of many of its musicians by introducing them to audiences hungry for their sound. Pete Seeger, Woody Guthrie, Lead Belly, Lightnin' Hopkins, Sonny Terry, and Brownie McGee are some of the musicians recorded by the label. My guest Peter Goldsmith is the author of the new book Making People's Music, about Folkways and its founder, Mo Ash, who died in 1986. Ash first specialized in Yiddish recordings, one of which we're about to hear. I asked Goldsmith about Ash's connection to Yiddish culture.
Well, he was connected to Yiddish culture through his father, Sholem Ash, who was the most widely read Yiddish author in the interwar period. And so Ash capitalized on those connections to record that music, and then in turn capitalized on those connections to do work for the Jewish Daily Forwards radio station, WEVD. And Ash got his start by first building the hardware for the radio station. He built the transmitter, because his start was actually in radio electronics. And then, as he described it, having provided them with the hardware, they then needed the software. They needed the recordings. And so capitalizing on his connections with the Yiddish theater, as well as with Jewish liturgical music, he created records, probably first exclusively for airplay, and then slowly he branched out to create commercial recordings to be sold to Jewish audiences in New York and elsewhere.
What Yiddish recording have you brought with you, and why did you choose it?
Well, I chose a recording that was released in the early years of Folkways, because the recordings that he recorded of Yiddish material in the 40s are no longer commercially available. But I think it's similar to representative of the secular Yiddish music that he recorded in the 1940s. It's a musician named Nazarov, referred to as Prince Nazarov, on a LP called Jewish Freilich Songs. And it's a short recording called Melech vi Blumen, translated as Girls Are Like Flowers. And it happens to be in my collection in part because it was among the recordings that was in my household when I was growing up, and I listened to it as a child growing up.
And this recording is from the early 50s?
Yeah, it was released on Folkways in 1954, although it may have been released somewhat earlier. The liner notes refer to Nazarov as a singer who appeared on radio and in musical comedy and in vaudeville. In the 1950s, the Jewish theater and Jewish burlesque houses were certainly in decline, so it was probably he represented the last vestiges of Jewish vaudeville music of the early 50s.
Okay, so this is Nathan Prince Nazarov.
Hot der Kapsen Kinder viel Kinder heulen nach der Hot der Heuwes mehr wie Horing Kanzen zum Parke weg Ulle Kapsen lalala Kinder Kapsen von dem Schaf dem Taheim an Mieder fangen und die Kinder ihm singen den Kinderlieder Schweben Keule sind sie schief, wie die schwarze Roben, Kinderstimmel, armen Heu, willen alles ho.
I've never heard that before. That's really interesting. There's something so Folkways about it. It sounds like the only Appalachian Yiddish folk singer.
Yeah, it's a pretty eccentric recording.
Yeah, because you think of Yiddish music as having, you know, like clarinets and bands behind them, not a solo guitar accompaniment.
It's not klezmer music. He's playing an instrument I've never heard of called the octophone. There's a photograph in the liner notes of him holding it. Octophone, I presume, refers to its having eight strings. It looks sort of like a big mandolin.
Oh, well, this is very interesting. My guest is Peter Goldsmith, who has written a biography of Mo Ash, who was the founder of Folkways Music. So Mo Ash started by recording Yiddish music, but then he moved into folk music and into African-American songs of various sorts, work songs, blues. Among the most famous Folkways recordings are the recordings of Lead Belly, and you've brought one of those with you, one from 1942. Before we hear it, how did Lead Belly end up on Folkways Records? And I guess that story kind of combines with how Mo Ash moved into recording African-American performers.
Well, I think of Ash's recording of Lead Belly as the great leap, a kind of great leap in his understanding of the significance of folk music. There really wasn't any precedent at all for it in his recording. But at least the story, as I understand it, is that a person who was involved in the International Lady Garment Workers Union's production, Pins and Needles, a theatrical musical production, named Cy Rady, came to Mo Ash and said that there was a performer in the production of Pins and Needles named Lead Belly, who was in need of some work and needed to record in order to help make ends meet. And Ash agreed to record him. And to me, it was a great leap of intuition and faith to understand that Lead Belly was somebody important in culturally and musically, and to move beyond the Yiddish recordings. I think the groundwork was set in lots of ways with the popular front movement of the late 1930s, which was a movement that was really initiated by the Communist Party, but came to be a cultural movement that was shared by leftists of lots of different stamps who understood that the celebration of the music of common Americans was an important task. So Ash was certainly not a communist. He was rather stridently anti-communist. But I believe in lots of ways he picked up a popular front aesthetic, and it was that aesthetic that enabled him in part to recognize the importance of Lead Belly.
Had Alan Lomax already recorded Lead Belly by the time Mo Ash did?
Yes, he had. He had recorded Lead Belly commercially on, I believe, the, both the Musicraft label and the Victor label. So, indeed, there were commercial records of Lead Belly already out. By 1942, commercial labels were no longer interested in Lead Belly. And I don't believe that anybody else besides Ash recorded Lead Belly after 1942. And Ash continued to record Lead Belly from 1942 until his death in 1949.
Well, you've brought with you a really interesting Lead Belly recording from 1942 because it features Lead Belly on accordion as opposed to his 12-string guitar. When did he play accordion?
Well, apparently the accordion was his first instrument, and he picked it up as a young adult, I suppose. And that was his first introduction to instrumental accompaniment to song. And this song, Cornbread Rough, I think just has such wonderful, rollicking energy to it. And I chose it in part because it's unusual because of the use of the accordion, but also it's just a wonderfully rich and musical performance.
This is Lead Belly, recorded in 1942 and featured on the Folkways recording Work Songs of the USA. We'll talk more with Peter Goldsmith, author of Making People's Music, after a break. This is Fresh Air. Back with Peter Goldsmith, his new book, Making People's Music, is about Folkways Records and its founder, Mo Ash. You say that Mo Ash expected his recordings to contribute to international, interracial, and interethnic understanding. Tell us more about what he hoped for in those areas.
Well, in the book, I've described Mo Ash as a kind of a cultural broker. That is, a person who facilitated the interaction of people who did not necessarily share the same cultural presuppositions. And my sense is that he believed that when people could appreciate the rich cultural accomplishments of people unlike themselves, that it would eat away at prejudice and that it would be part of the process of promoting international understanding to make music of this kind available.
This is the 50th anniversary of Folkways, particularly during the first couple of decades of Folkways, and then before the start of Folkways, when Mo Ash was just recording on, you know, on the Ash record label.
Ash and Disc record labels, which were 78s.
Yeah, these were periods when folk music was identified with the left and with union organizing. And I think two of the people most responsible for that identification were Woody Guthrie and Pete Seeger, who recorded on Folkways Records. Tell us a little bit about their philosophies of music and the working man.
Well, in the Popular Front era, folk music came to be seen as the most important vehicle for promoting left-wing, particularly union causes. The familiar phrase of that era was, my music is my weapon. Music as a political weapon to further the cause of unionism, of world peace. In some instances, I suppose for American communism, too, and Woody Guthrie was quite sympathetic with the Communist Party. Both Pete Seeger and Woody Guthrie were communists. But I think it's important to understand that the majority of American communists of this era were interested in communism as a way of promoting the condition of working Americans, of assuring racial reconciliation, and not the domination of the world by the Soviet Union. So folk music was considered the preeminent vehicle for the promotion of these left-wing causes.
What was it about folk music, do you think, that made this connection between folk music and the American left in the 40s, 50s, part of the 60s? Do you think it was the lyrics or just the intentions of the people who were performing?
Well, I think it was both things. It was lyrics. It was the intentions of the performers. I think those on the cultural left just plain liked folk music. But the other thing about it is that, at least as they imagined it, anybody could do it. And the ability to learn guitar chords quickly and play this music.
Oh, and sing-alongs.
And sing-alongs were tremendously important. Pete Seeger has always believed in the importance of group singing as a means of moving people, of changing people's minds and getting them to think about themselves as a community. He's never tired of attempting to move a hall full of people with group singing.
You brought with you a 1944 recording of Jackhammer Blues featuring Woody Guthrie along with Cisco Houston and Sonny Terry. How did these people all come together for this 1944 session?
Well, there were a series of sessions in April of 1944 and early May, and they happened in part because Woody Guthrie walked into Ash's office one day and introduced himself and expressed his interest in recording for Ash, and Ash said, sure, I'll record you and I'll record your buddies. And for several weeks, there was a kind of an open house in Ash Studios, and Woody came in, but he also brought his good friend and musical partner, Cisco Houston, and other people dropped in, including Sonny Terry and Cisco Houston. The pianist Mary Lou Williams was around during some of these sessions, and it was this incredible moment of musical cross-pollination, a kind of explosion of American folk music, and remains a kind of treasure trove that Smithsonian Folkways is continuing to mine in the release of recordings.
Okay, let's hear it. That's Woody Guthrie with Cisco Houston on guitar, Sonny Terry harmonica, from a recording that has been subsequently reissued on CD called Woody Guthrie Sings Folk Songs with Lead Belly, Cisco Houston, Sonny Terry, and Bess Hawes. And my guest, Peter Goldsmith, is the author of a new biography of Mo Ash, the founder of Folkways Records, and this is the 50th anniversary of Folkways. A lot of people have commented over the years that although Mo Ash recorded music that was perceived as, you know, the pro-working man and pro-union, that he didn't have a great reputation in how he treated the people who worked for him. What were the complaints about Mo Ash?
The primary complaint about Mo Ash from a business perspective was that he did not pay royalties consistently, and often artists had to bother him to get the royalties that were owed to him. And I think Ash's view was that he was dedicated to the music and he was dedicated to making it available, and arguably, if he had been as careful as he might have been in paying royalties, he wouldn't have been able to grow the collection to continue to make the records available. And this wonderful treasure that's today Folkways Records would not have existed. And it was a kind of a trade-off, which in some respects you might regard as defensible. On the other hand, there's a sense in which it wasn't altogether his money with which to do what he wanted. It belonged to the artists. He made it clear to people in various ways that if people expected to make a living by selling records, probably they belonged on a different label.
Mo Ash founded Folkways Records 50 years ago. What made him decide to form Folkways after running a couple of small record labels that recorded 78 RPM recordings?
Well, I think Mo Ash started Folkways Records because the record business was the only thing he knew how to do anymore at that point. He had been in the electronics business previously, repairing radios and installing antennas and then installing sound equipment in Yiddish theaters and burlesque houses. But this was the only thing that he knew how to do. And I think he thought it was important work. Also, significantly, I think he believed it was work that would be worthy in the eyes of his very famous father. There's a somewhat apocryphal story that undoubtedly has some truth about Ash accompanying his father to Princeton, New Jersey to record Albert Einstein for a broadcast on WEVD. And after Sholem Ash interviewed Einstein, Einstein turned to the younger Ash and said, "What do you do?" And Ash described this idea for a kind of encyclopedia of world cultural music, and Einstein said that's a worthy thing to do. Sholem Ash was there to hear it, and in the telling in subsequent years, this was a critical moment, a kind of iconic moment in the start of recording of this kind. I doubt it happened exactly like that, but I do believe that Ash kept this enterprise going even after his father's death in 1957 because it was work that his father would have regarded, did regard as worthy.
How did Mo Ash manage to keep a record company in business that never catered to popular taste. You know, Folkways didn't have these huge sellers the way major record companies try to.
Yeah, he kept Folkways alive with a business practice that would never fly today. He insisted on keeping every single title in print forever. But he did that because he knew where his audiences were. He particularly knew that he had audiences with music educators and librarians, and he regularly every year attended the conferences of music educators and librarians and anthropologists. He listened to the things that they said and the things that they wanted, and he put out records that he knew that they would buy. And then he had arrangements with pressing plants that enabled him to press as few as 50 or 100 copies of a recording at a time. I'm sure you can't do that with CDs today. And you probably couldn't in the 1950s and 60s unless you were Mo Ash. Lots of people just had a soft spot in their heart for Mo Ash, regarded the things that he did as important and made arrangements with him that they wouldn't have made with anybody else.
My guest is Peter Goldsmith, author of Making People's Music. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. Back with Peter Goldsmith, his new book, Making People's Music, is about Folkways Records and its founder, Mo Ash. Do you think that Folkways led the way for other record companies who specialized in folk music?
Folkways was unquestionably the model for a whole set of folk music labels that came out in the 1970s. The obvious ones are Rounder Records and the late Bruce Kaplan's Flying Fish in Chicago, other labels like Philo, and then more specialized labels like Shanachie and Green Linnet. He showed the way in demonstrating that you could address small, somewhat eclectic audiences, but that if you put out material that was of good quality and well documented and well presented, then even if the audiences were small, they were guaranteed and loyal. So when other folk music labels came out in the 1970s, they did what Ash did. From a business point of view, they probably improved on Ash in lots of ways, particularly in the area of marketing and distribution.
What was the role of Folkways in your life when you were coming of age musically?
Well, Folkways records were played in my house all the time when I was growing up. And I've come to understand that there are people all over the country who have Folkways records now, I suppose, mostly in their basements and in boxes. I've discovered that when you ask people about Folkways records, there are certain kinds of people who say, oh, yes, I knew those records. And they're very important to me as I was growing up. And it tells you a whole world about the kinds of people who own them. They were people like me whose families were dedicated to left-wing political causes, to the civil rights movement, to the anti-war movement. And these records were of a piece with a set of political convictions and aesthetic orientations. And Woody Guthrie albums and Lead Belly albums were part of the sound of my childhood.
Peter, I'm going to ask you to leave us with a recording from the Folkways collection that had a big influence on you when you were young.
Well, I've brought with me Charity Bailey's Hey Betty Martin. Charity Bailey was the musical director of the Little Red Schoolhouse in New York City, which was a school to which many left-wing and particularly Jewish residents of New York sent their children, continue to send their children. And she recorded a series of wonderful children's songs for Ash. Hey Betty Martin is one of them. It appeared on a record that was played all the time in my household called Songs to Grow On, Volume 2. And it's just a wonderful, inspiring song for small children that my children danced around the living room to, and now my brother's child is undoubtedly dancing around the living room too as well.
Well, Peter Goldsmith, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
It was a great pleasure, Terry. Thank you.
Peter Goldsmith is the author of the new biography of Mo Ash, the founder of Folkways Records. It's called Making People's Music, and this is the 50th anniversary of Folkways.